right, and it's just a day at the park. Hi, everybody, talking Fugitive with Kitty and Bobby and Ken. Back on for tonight, Act 4 of The Judgment, and we're starting to get to the end of the line. And that was more than just a little, you know, blast from the past. There's actually some significance to the amusement park in tonight's program. So let's get going with it right away. Here's Bobby Neer.
Thank you, Dave. Well, as impossible as it may seem, once again, after 42 years, it's time for Richard Kimball to finally catch up to the one-armed man as we take on Act 4 of Part 2 of The Judgment. When we last left Louis Chandler, he had admitted to his wife that he was there the night of Helen's murder, and he cemented his reputation as the biggest coward in TV history when he stood on the stairway and watched her get bludgeoned by Fred Johnson. Now, after getting soundly berated and humiliated by his wife, he decides to pick up a rifle and go and finish the job himself at a local amusement park, where a rendezvous with the one-armed man had already been set up. Well, that's fine, it's about time, but as usual, I have a couple of questions. First, I was not aware that you could grow a backbone out of thin air. He sure didn't have one for 4 years. Now he's as mad as hell, and he's not going to take it anymore. He's a hunter, and nothing will stop him now. Amazing. This trio has run all across the country, sometimes to some interesting locations. Well, at least most of them created mostly on a studio backlot. And now back in Stafford, in a sizable amusement park, not likely to be in such a small town. But that's okay. My real problem is that they are in a place rife with potential, and they do nothing with it. An abandoned amusement park. No, not an abandoned amusement park. A filled park with lots of people and especially children, with the three of them hunting each other down and trying desperately to avoid hurting anyone else. It's the chase to end all chases, but it's not going to happen. I don't know if anyone here has seen the movie Roller Coaster from 1977, in which a detective played by George Segal hunts down an urban terrorist played by Timothy Bottoms, who's looking for money. He's already planted explosive devices in popular parks around the country and killed a lot of people. Now in the finale, which is actually filmed in King's Dominion in Virginia, a place I've personally been to many times. But in the movie, the place is open and full of people, and that makes the difference as the chase goes on. It's not a great movie, but it's a great sequence. But no, QM Productions wasn't about to cough up any extra cash for hundreds of extras to just mill around all day or to turn the electric back on in what was really Pacific Ocean Park in California, which was abandoned and shut down, and turn the rides on again, especially the roller coaster. Need more? Well, how about the Hitchcock classic movie Strangers on a Train that also has a finale in an amusement park? The final scene takes place on a wildly spinning out-of-control merry-go-round. It is classically and incredibly exciting. The Fugitive, right in the middle of these two films, could have set a new standard, but did not. Now, I have something else to say about this, but first let's let Kitty comment, and then you can send it back to me, and we'll send it to Ken. Kitty?
Well, on the premise of going to the abandoned amusement park, I kind of see it both ways. I mean, I don't necessarily have that much of a problem with them meeting in the amusement park. It's, you know, and as for Chandler growing a backbone, one could make the argument that he has decided he's going to do this because this guy all of a sudden came out of the woodwork and tried to blackmail him. You know, maybe he just doesn't want to continuously be blackmailed, although it still is a silly premise for why he's getting blackmailed. But, yeah, I think definitely it could have been better with people there, with them trying to dodge people. And actually, they didn't even necessarily have to hire extras because there's several amusement parks in Southern California that are operational, you know, that they certainly could have used for this amusement park. And, you know, they wouldn't have even had to have hired extras. They just could have filmed as they were going through the crowds.
But, Kitty, why go there if you're not going to use it? The only time they use it is the opening scenes there where Chandler is taking pot shots at Johnson while he's ducking behind various things in the park. And that's it. The finale of them at the top of the tower having the final fight scene, which we'll get to in a little while, was they filmed that on the soundstage. They didn't have cameras up there. So I don't know why they spent the money to even go over there that day. You don't go there if you're not going to use it. This is what Hitchcock understood. If you're going to go there, use it, okay? I mean, he did that in a lot of films, and they just let it lay there. It's like, oh, yeah, we're in an amusement park, but we're through with that now. I just don't get it.
Yeah, and I agree. You bring up some good points, and it certainly could have been more interesting. And I think it would have been a lot more interesting if Kimball and Gerard had not been so buddy-buddy at the end. I like your idea about having a three-way chase going on in the park. We had a similar type of chase in that dreadful episode that I disliked called The Evil Men Do with you know, Kimball and Gerard and the bad guy.
Okay, well, let me just interrupt you for a second here.
But this one, you know, so you could have had something very similar here that would have been good.
You're a little bit ahead of me, old man. I was going to get to that in a minute. But before we get to that part, which is my other problem with this, I want to ask Ken. Ken, don't you think this could have been utilized a little better than it was?
I agree. An empty amusement park, not really much going on. If you remember two episodes that had some chase,
right.
When you have other people and have other surroundings,
right.
It makes it much, much more thrilling. One, never wave goodbye. Kimball leaving the jailhouse.
Exactly.
Running down the stairs with Susan Oliver, and you've got people all over and Gerard on the elevator. That was one. And then the other one was Escape into Black.
Right.
Where Kimball's on the train with Margaret Ruskin, and Gerard's there, and you've got people, and Kimball runs through and jumps off.
Always the Susan Oliver. All that this guy knows about is Susan Oliver.
Oh, I had to get a plug in for her at the final show. Come on. But anyway,
You go to a park, you use it.
An empty amusement park, just Kimball and Johnson, and you mentioned Gerard in a three-way chase. Sorry, Bob. You got to add Donna. Make it a four-way chase.
Wait a minute. Before we get into that, because I was going to get into that in this part of the first part of our show here, and because at the start of the chase, something really ridiculous happens, and that is Gerard is shot in the leg and collapses on the ground. For him, the chase is over. Sure, he'll fire the pivotal shot later, but come on, I want all three of them in the chase. I wanted a better showdown at the top of that tower. And most of all, I wanted Gerard to make a final decision. Kimball and Johnson have the drop on each other at the top of the tower. Gerard has the ability to take one of them out, but which one? It's time he was forced to make a final and fateful decision. Don't make it easy for him. Don't you think that's true, Ken?
I would also add a confession by Johnson heard by Gerard.
Right.
You know, maybe Gerard's in the background and Kimball and Johnson are fighting, arm wrestling, and they finally talk to each other, which I mentioned in our book.
Right.
That they don't get to talk to each other back and forth in a conversation until episode 120, act 4, 5 minutes in. Absolutely ridiculous.
Right.
But how about Gerard overhears the confession, and then Gerard gets in the little tumble, and then I would add Donna. Donna's running around, and she confronts
Johnson. I never thought about that. That's an interesting possibility.
And how about Donna whacks Johnson across the head? Kimball comes over. Gerard comes over. You've got all four main characters. Make it the highlight of the series.
Of course.
I mean,
you've had look, Gerard makes the whole show happen. We've discussed that many times. Without his obsession, nothing happens. Kimball goes off and he goes to live in Seattle somewhere, and nobody ever sees him again. It's no big deal. You know, I know somebody it happened to. So it's no big deal. So and he can get away with it. So Gerard is the pivotal character in the whole story, and so you're going to leave him on the ground? You're going to leave him on the ground?
Yeah.
I mean, if I had been a producer and they handed me that script, I would have been screaming. I would have said, you've got to be kidding me. I don't want Gerard on the ground with a leg wound. I want him at the top of the tower. I want him right in the middle of it. He's got to be in the middle of it. Did that bother you at all, Kitty?
Yeah, to a certain degree. It seemed kind of too easy to take Gerard out of it, and then for Gerard to hand Kimball his gun and say, go get him. I mean, one of the things that I had a problem with was that you'd think that if they were heading to that place where they knew Lloyd Chandler was going to shoot the one-armed man, you'd think that Gerard would have been calling, would have been on his
right.
radio calling for backup
exactly.
to get to the amusement park because there was going to be a shootout of some kind. But yeah, to take him out, it kind of diminishes it. And, you know, I don't know if I necessarily think Donna needed to be in it, but I would also say if you're going to bring Donna into the fold, well then, you know, his brother Ray certainly could have
yeah.
added something at the end.
Yeah, you have to. I mean, you're right up at the very end. The Fugitive is very proud of itself to this day as being the first TV series to really bring things to a conclusion. Well, if you're going to do that, and you want to be talked about into eternity, then you better make it good. You just don't put that out there. You got to get together in a story meeting and say, look, we're going to pull out all the stops. Now, of course, you could go too far with that, and it becomes comical, but there's a lot there that's left undone, and they don't create the kind of suspense that they needed to create at the very end. I can't imagine anybody being wounded and being left behind, because it just doesn't make any sense. I think they believed they were very, very ironic, that Gerard gets wounded, and he's got to give him all his gun, blah, 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 blah. Okay, you know what? That would have been pretty good if it wasn't for these other things. And that's why I have a real problem with it. It doesn't come true. Now, I do have something good to say about it, and that is that I really like the fight scene at the top of the tower between Kimball and the one-armed man. I like the fact that Kimball's beating the crap out of him. Don't you, Ken?
Yes. You know, having some action in Act 4, you know, you can imagine the audience across the country. And, you know, the music was chilling. You know, Kimball climbs the tower. They make it dramatic, and you know, we find out that Johnson's a tough guy. You know, even though he's got one arm, he could clobber Kimball. I didn't like Kimball having a gun because that was out of character for
sure.
The whole series.
Right.
He's not a guy with a gun, so that was out of place. But he fights, you know, and Johnson's about to fall off. And you wonder what's going to happen. Actually, the two of them fighting, you know, it was a little brutal, don't you think?
Yeah, but it's kind of a catharsis. I really needed Kimball to do that.
Yeah.
After all this time, I needed him to beat him up, didn't you, Kitty?
Well, you know, on the one hand, yes, but on the other hand, him finally beating up Johnson kind of rings hollow for me, because throughout this whole 119 episodes leading up to this, he's never really seemed like he was that upset that Helen was murdered. I mean, we never saw any grief. And all of a sudden now, I mean, you actually get the impression that he's really upset that his wife was murdered. And it's like, well, you know, Kimball, you're a little late coming to this party.
Well, I thought it the other way. I thought he was just upset because he had to run around the country.
That you were this upset 119 episodes ago.
All right. Well, we're running out of time here for the first part of the program. We're going to take a quick time out, and I hope that Kimball held one arm behind his back when he had the fight with Johnson in order to make it fair. The kind of a guy he is. We'll take a quick time out. Be right back. More talk of Fugitive here on Retro Radio.
If you've enjoyed Talkin' Fugitive over the last few years, then be sure to stick around when KSAV will bring you a new program based on the television classic Twilight Zone. Same episode-by-episode analysis, same in-depth discussion, same interesting and provocative hosts. And it takes place at the same time and channel, so no adjustment of either your computer or your schedule is required. Just keep listening every other Tuesday to KSAV, the reason your computer came with speakers.
Sun.
it's all over. Darn near, we're back, and it's getting close to being all over. No more wasting time with me. Bobby Near, you pick up right where we left off.
Okay, Dave. Well, in spite of what the Electric Light Orchestra seems to think, it's only over for Richard Kimball, not for us. 2 weeks from tonight on April 21st, our final Talking Fugitive program, Kitty will tell us what happened to the main characters after it was all over. You know, they end the series and they think they've done a big deal, but life goes on. There's a life after the series, and we need to know what happened to the main characters. If you can't wait 2 weeks, the answer is already at our website in the file section, because long ago, Kitty wrote an ending story and told us what happened, but she'll expand upon that on our show on April 21st. And we'll find out if Kimball really did have to kill Jean Carlisle in order to get rid of her. I think he did. And we will discuss our favorite moments and our least favorite moments. And finally, we will each assign a final rating to the series, taking into account the good and the bad. The Fugitive is often called the greatest dramatic series in TV history. In fact, Davis said that many times. Really? Well, that's quite a claim. We will find out if it is really deserving of it 2 weeks from tonight on Talking Fugitive. Ah, yes, the music during the break, it's over by Electric Light Orchestra, only it really isn't over yet. QM Productions always provided acts and an epilogue on their shows, and so we have that a little bit left. And the epilogue, we see the front of the courthouse, and not quite as many reporters as I would imagine would be there. And Kimball and company come out the front door triumphantly, free at last. But I'm a little disappointed. I wanted to see a little inside the courtroom, especially when the judge told Kimball he was free to go. But we don't get to see that either. Okay, I can live with that. The two things much worse are about to happen. Gerard is there standing off to the side, and Kimball walks by, and they look at each other wordlessly, and then gasp, shake hands, while Jean stands there like an idiot. Gerard is practically beaming approval as if he's at his son's college graduation. Now, I don't expect a physical altercation, but this is hideous. I feel like I've been played for a fool. These two really love each other. Come on, give me a break. Kitty, this isn't how it should end, should it?
No. To look at these two, they look like they're now going to become bowling buddies. You know, and that's just not going to happen. That's not the way it works in real life. I mean, particularly with the way it ended. I mean, everybody was at Donna's house just content to cool their heels and do absolutely nothing. I mean, Gerard basically got lucky at the end. I mean, because he was doing absolutely nothing proactive to try to help Kimball when there were things that we pointed out that they could have been doing during that 24 hours.
Don't you think it was amazing that Gerard is standing outside the courthouse alone and that the press was not jumping all over him? We see the news every day, and you know what
it's really like. Not yet.
They'd be screaming in his ear. How do you feel about ruining this man's life? What are you going to do now? I mean, he'd be driven crazy.
Yeah, I mean, it is pretty unrealistic. You know, I think that in the real world, people would have been shoving microphones into his face saying, well, don't you feel like a complete idiot? You know, you chased a guy from one end of the country to the other only to find out that he was innocent all along, and he saved your rear end six times, and you still couldn't believe that he actually was innocent, you know? I mean, it's no wonder poor Barry Morse got harassed when he went out into public by people, because his character as the series went on just got dumber and dumber.
You know, I'll tell you what I really wanted to see at that moment. I didn't have a problem with the fact that they faced each other. I thought that was a nice piece of irony. But I wanted them to just stop for a minute and have Gerard look at him as if he was trying to apologize, not say anything, not smile, not do anything, but almost as if show a little pain over what he had done and how he'd carried it too far, only to have Kimball look at him with a certain look. And David Jansen was legendary for body language and for making faces. So you got an actor there who knows how to do it. You know, he doesn't need me to tell him what to do. He could have come up with something right out of the script or on his own that would have said, look, it's not that easy. You've wrecked my life. Don't expect me to come out here now and shake your hand and tell you what a great guy you really are. And the audience is smart enough to have picked up on that. But to simply have them and to have them shake hands is, I was just a teenager when I watched that. And I thought to myself, I just can't buy this. I don't know that if anybody had driven me crazy that way, then I would be so accommodating, and I would just say, ah, you know, come on, let's go have a drink. Let bygones be bygones. You did your job. I did my job. Everything worked out in the end. It's fine. Life, I like that. People hold grudges, and people hold grudges over far less than that. So that would be absolutely ridiculous. Now, let me skip to one other thing while we still have time, then we can come back to this, because I absolutely want to ask Ken about this, because if there was ever a question that should be asked of Ken, this is the one, because it's still not over. Sorry, Yellow, the very worst is yet to come. Kimball, with Gene Carlisle having been surgically implanted onto his arm, starts to walk down the street. It's nice. He's free. We're all free. How good can we feel? But something is missing. Donna. Donna gets left at the courthouse door. This woman, the first one to stand by him, to wring her hands, to cry when he's on the phone, to do all she can to free her brother, does not get to walk down the street with him. This is appalling. The final insult. Now, Ken, we all know how much you love Donna, how you think she's beautiful and the very best. Why, if she wasn't Kimball's sister, she would have been the best possible love interest. I know you have got to be livid over this. What do you think?
Oh, where do I start? Donna should have been in episode number one. She should have been in 20 more throughout the series. And in the final two parts, she should have been an integral part of the entire story altogether. And in fact, if you read our Fugitive Views and Reviews, Volume 4, and read my review on The Judgment,
right,
I make a suggestion and even a thrilling different conclusion that has Donna as the hero of the entire thing. She solves the Kimball case. She's the one who frees Kimball. And she's the one, along with Margaret Ruskin, who should have been included, and also Marie Gerard should have been in the last two parts. And in that final scene when Gerard and Kimball are there, Marie Gerard should have been there too. Why not? You know, have more drama, have more character.
That's because Marie's in the process of leaving Phil.
Right. But I agree, Bob.
She's left at the door. It's incredible.
Bob, the final scene, you know, we didn't even see the courthouse. What
right.
I would have done was delete some of the parts in Act 4.
Sure.
And start the epilogue about midway through, get into the courthouse, get to the judge, get Gerard in there, get Donna, have all the cast of characters. The judge explains everything about the Chandler witness or whatever. He excuses Kimball. You have an eruption in the courthouse. Then they walk out. And instead of Kimball saying, goodbye, Donna, I'll see you at the house, he hugs her. You know, he's thrilled to death. Donna's leaping for joy. Gerard's over there along with Marie, and they're just kind of, you know, baffled as what to do. I mean, the whole thing could have been a glorious ending to this series. Instead, they just fell right on their face.
Right, and it can be done right. I'd like to point out that in the old Mary Tyler Moore show, in the final, very famous final episode, the fact of the matter is they made sure that all of the regular cast members were in that episode.
Yeah.
Everybody had a little part in it. Everybody came back because everybody wanted to see that. And it's an all-time TV classic. Everybody had, whether they only had a couple of lines, didn't matter. Whether they only had a walkthrough, didn't matter. Just bring everybody back because you've been sitting here all these years, it was like 7 years, and you want to see everybody back in there. Only characters who have died during it or something should not be back. But, I mean, it's ridiculous. It's very, very depressing to see Donna left at the door. I mean, of all the people in the story, in the show, she was the most emotional one. She was the one wringing her hands and losing her mind over everything. And I don't understand that you've got, you know, you've had this great success with this show, and you're about to make TV history. You're going to bring it to an end. They ended up with something like 70-some% of the audience that night. And so it's all sitting right in your lap. You don't want to take the easy way out. I think QM Productions should have said, we don't care how much the money is. You get to the amusement park, you put 3,000 extras in there, do whatever you got, because we're going to make TV history. They've been talking about this for decades. So we want to make it memorable. We want the three people getting on the radio years from now talking about what we did wrong. Let's do it right. And they didn't do it. And that's extremely shocking. They simply took the easy way out. And I think that is really, really very regrettable. Now, I just want to say there are some things about the about that final scene that I do like. I do like the fact that about, like I said, about the fight on the tower and all, things like that. But these other things are just not excusable, and it just is a very, very unfortunate thing to see. Ken, don't you think if even half of those things were taken the right way, we'd have a different view, would we not?
Yes. How about the final letdown of no dialogue between Gerard and Kimball? Now, I know Jansen and Morris talked about it.
Yeah, right.
And these two clowns, they decided just to shake hands and say nothing. I say, I would ask both
of
these actors.
Because in the original script, it played out like something from The Godfather. I read Barry Morse's book, and Barry said that in the original script, Gerard walks up to Kimball and says, "I hope you understand, this was never personal. I was just doing my job."
Oh, really?
And Kimball says, "Well, you know, a man's got to do what a man's got to do." And they thought that dialogue was so stupid that as soon as they said it, they grabbed each other and they kissed each other on the mouth. And it brought everybody just falling off their chairs on the set. And the director said, "Okay, what would you two like to do?" And they said, "We just think we should shake hands and say nothing."
Well, that,
so that's
what terrible.
Happened. Although I think I kind of like the kissing thing better. I mean, I think, boy, how many people across America would have had massive coronaries that night? I mean, now that would have been a show to talk about for decades.
But Kitty, the audience who is watching, they just got cheated. And personally,
well, my personal feeling is
okay,
that
one
Kimball
minute.
Should have given Gerard his middle finger, you know, saying,
yeah,
"Up yours." You know, you're the one who ended up looking like the idiot.
Let Ken finish this thought in a few seconds. What were you going to say, Ken?
Bob, I invested a lot of hours of my time watching some television show. I got cheated at the end, and it's not fair, Bob.
You're right. That's exactly right. The
You're right, because if it had been up to me, I would have had him walk up and kick him in the balls. Like, you know, that's what you get for putting me through all this.
Well, they were up against it. They weren't going to be able to please everybody no matter what they did, let's face it. But I think they really failed on this. They should have gotten all their best people together, best producers, best writers, everybody, lock the door and sit in there and say, "We're not leaving here until we come up with a finale and that we'll be talking about forever." That's how you do it, because it's that important. And that's it. That simple.
All right, and that's it. Is it? Hey, boy, this is you guys. You know how to make a finale here. You come out right to the second, and the finale is going to be in 2 weeks. Then, and you're going to give your summation of the whole series. So, for everybody else, listen. You've made it this far, folks. Stick around for just one more show. In 2 weeks, we'll be back, the same gang here to talk Fugitive on Sherevision Radio.
Go ahead with your own life, leave me alone. I never said you had to offer me a second chance.